anchors in a pontoon boat, driven by my buddy Mike. We're fishing out on the basin for alligator walleye pike. Emo brought his TV and Routy's beagle Fred. He's too old to drive a rabbit, so he comes fishing with us instead. We got lawn chairs, a poker table, an ice cold keg of beer. We're loaded down with so much stuff, Mike can hardly steer.
Hey, watch out for the stuff!
When he oopers in a pontoon boat, fishing from
what better way to start off a freshwater fishing report than with Diupers? If you go on the Diupers website, you can actually purchase that song from Diupers, which is always fun, entertaining, and exciting. The Upers and all their deer camp, and they have the world's largest outhouse display up in Michigan on Highway 41. Actually, the same road that goes in front of the store here, all the way up Michigan.
I won't be going up there to see that anytime soon.
No? The world's largest outhouse display?
No.
Robert, we need to get up to that UP, though. There's some really good spike fishing up there.
Yeah.
Really good.
For those of you who are interested, and if you read the thing, it says freshwater, statewide freshwater fishing report with Captain Morris Campbell. And that's who we have in the guest spot, Fishing Frank here and Robert in the chair across from me. So, anyway, what a day. Power outages, surges, all kinds of weird stuff going on.
I can't win for losing with this some days.
Yeah. Man, I got to tell you. So, anyway, have you had a chance to experience the wonders and, you know, terrificness of the fishing in Florida here recently, Morris?
Yeah. A couple days ago, my son and I got a chance to just get out and go bass fishing, and you know, we had a little chance to go into Garcia Reservoir, which is over near Vero Beach on the East Coast, and it's actually crow fly. It's 1 mile south of the Stick Marsh, and you know, we were kind of excited to go see what the hurricane had changed, and there were some brand new islands out there and things that were created by the hurricane.
New islands.
I mean, totally a wall of probably 400 yards thick of trees and debris and floating vegetation that had just basically ran into the depth of the water and created an island.
Well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's something, you know, I would have almost thought might have happened here in the harbor after watching so much stuff go down the river. But actually, I haven't heard of much that changed, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, I think we were very fortunate on this side.
Now, you had an island. Your house was an island for a while.
Yeah, my entire house was an island. Somehow, some way, the powers that be thought it would be a wise thing to leave the dam wide open at Webb Lake in Cecil Webb Wildlife Area, and all of that sheet flow came out of Webb Lake, and instead of flooding the wildlife area and the uninhabited forest areas, they put it all down on us, and my entire property was under 6-7 feet of water, and all the way up to the house and barns. And you know, me and my neighbor, we're only two of us that live on the south side there, and you know, we both got it.
Yeah, because I saw the pictures of your place. It was within a few inches of your floor. The house is elevated up on the old
concrete pilings. But
yeah, so it didn't actually get into the house as bad, but I heard your roof lifted off the walls.
It tried to do a little separation there. You know, we can see daylight in quite a few places, and It must have been a pretty interesting ride if you were in the house when the storm was coming through.
Yeah.
I wasn't.
No, I can tell you. I think a lot of us decided after Charlie, we've seen a Category 4, and I've got the T-shirt, the hat, I've got the
belt buckle.
The belt buckle, I've got all that. I really didn't need to do it again. So I think that was, once you've done a Category 4, the best thing to do is go somewhere, wait it out, come back and see what's left.
Yeah, basically I've got everything from Charlie except the underwear, and those weren't even usable anymore after that storm.
No, there wasn't anything good after that storm, that's true. Yeah, right down to the underwear, it was, yeah, I understand that. So anyway, what happened at the Garcia Reservoir?
We went in and we were greeted by a thunderstorm that happened to just build right up over the top of us when we first got out of the lake. And fortunately, on those lakes over there, Indian River, they actually put shelters on the lake so the fishermen can go and get under these. Fortunately, we were the only ones on the lake at the time, so we waited for an hour, and then when we got out of that, it was just Katie bar the door, top water, buzz baits, Smithwick Rogues, Bagley's Bangalores. We caught fish after fish, double headers. A couple times there, caught two fish at the same time on the Bangalore and the Rogue.
Have you fished the drunk bait yet?
I have not.
Okay. Do you have a package of them?
I do not.
All right. I'm going to give you a package. You pick whatever color you want and see what you can do with them next time you go back freshwater fishing. Now, the reports in the drunk bait, he's a really nice guy. Ybor, I think, is his name? Or
it's yeah, I think that's right.
Something like that. But really nice guy. Ex-rap artist out of Germany.
There you go.
And big fella. Really nice guy. But he moved to Florida, and he bought a trailer on the water, some community down there in South Fort Myers. And Harvey hit, ripped the top off of his, his home. It's a mobile home, you know, single wide. He ripped the top of it off while his wife and everybody was in it. Massive devastation. But he'd only bought the house a week before, couldn't get insurance on it. So now he's going to sell the property, but he doesn't really have much to sell for as far as the house, because his wife won't go back there. And so if you're out and listening and you buy a pack of drunk baits, help the fella out. He's not doing as well as he could. Having a rough time. But these drunk baits, everybody, Chandler, there's been 10 other people, all talking about how great they are on bass, but the saltwater reports are still a little mixed. Of course, the trout, the ladyfish, mackerel are all beating the heck out of them. We're really trying to find out if the snook and redfish are going to go after them, and it's just now getting to that time where I think that's going to take place. Hopefully, it works. If it works half as well in saltwater as it does in freshwater, it's going to be a good bait. But I'll give you a pack. We just had a big contest, and it's supposed to be 10 winners. And there were so many people entered, I ended up giving away 23 packs.
Oh, wow.
Instead of I was supposed to give away 10, but I decided I'd throw in some more. There was just like 80 answers to the question, so I just felt bad only giving away 10, so we gave away like 23.
Excellent.
So anyway, you said you were over there, and the Ratland, or the Smithwick, and the...
The Smithwick Rogue, you've got those in the shop, but I've been using those for probably since the first year they were put out.
I remember when they were the number one lure on the bass circuit.
And people, they tend to do a hot bait and then, they'll move away from it and tend to forget about it. But, there's a guy named Kevin Van Dam who is pretty much dominating that circuit, and 90% of the fish he catches are on his copy of the Rogue.
The reason they're still in the store here, because it's one of my favorite snook lures.
Absolutely. All fish.
I mean, that blue silver with the orange belly is one of my top, all-time top snook baits. But nobody buys it, even if you tell them, because it's not a name they know. So I keep them for me, the black and silver, but I'm my favorite one is the blue silver orange. But I keep them for me. It's a nice thing about owning a store. I can stock stuff that I use.
Well, two of those that I like are the Bagley Bangalore and the Smithwick Rogue, and both of those are just incredible baits. Did it a little different because the Smithwick Rogue, you can get it to suspend, or you can get the traditional floating diving, and the Bagley's Bangalore is only a floating diving. That's all it does.
But I remember, if you were going to go fishing in the harbor and you wanted to trout fish or whatever, you had to have a Bangalore.
Yep.
I mean, it was like a requirement. I don't know anybody who was a serious fisherman that didn't have Bangalores in their box.
Some of the biggest snook that I've caught in the past few years have been on the little Tennessee shad Bangalores.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I try and remind people. I'm old, but I still work. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
People are always just looking for the new interesting gadget, but I mean, so many of the old lures still work so phenomenally well. And the other cool thing is the price. I mean, we've discussed
the price. Well, now on the Bagley, it jumped. But
yeah, but it went under new ownership, and they did change something, so I kind of understand it.
But I'm just saying, you know, as far as the Rogues, I mean, they're still cheap. Mm-hmm. I mean, not cheap, but $5 to $7.
Yeah, so. But they're not a $10 Yozuri either, or a Lucky Craft.
$18, yeah. No, they're still within the price point. So, one of the things about it is I was upset with a couple of companies, and then I started doing the math on what it would take to get buildings new, trucks, all that, versus a factory that's been around for a long time. They already own all the buildings. Mm-hmm. They have the warehouses. They have all the stuff there for distribution. A new factory starting up, you can't make a dollar a lure and stay in business. You've got to make some money to pay for all
Absolutely.
That stuff. So I kind of get it now. For a while there, I was just thinking, man, I'm being ripped off. These things are too much money. But then you figure what it would actually take to start up a lure company now. That's astronomical money.
Yes, indeed.
So anyway, Lake Garcia hitting them on there. And now, did you do any live bait fishing?
No, this was all artificial. And, we kind of were old school with this thing. We didn't use any of the new fancy things. We used one of the lures that I was just absolutely, well, we caught 33, 35 fish in an afternoon, and our small fish was probably 3.5 pounds, and big fish was just under 7, all on artificials. And I was fishing a devil horse, a white with black stripe devil horse. I was fishing, a Bagley's Bangalore, and my son was fishing the Smithwick Rogue exclusively, and I was fishing a 1/4 ounce buzz bait. I mean, that's about as old school as you can get. We didn't have any fancy lures that made noises or anything like that. We just caught bass.
Fish more open water up against the weeds or around the heavy trees, or where were the fish coming out?
In Garcia, there are a bunch of berms. It's an old flooded farm, and there are a bunch of berms that run the entire length of the lake, and they have cattails, hydrilla, and trees on those berms that stick up, and it's a couple feet deep around those, and then it drops off to 3.5-4 feet off of those. Well, there was current coming in, and the current was flowing up against this one large berm area, which looks like an island. And, it had pushed the shad and shiners up against that. And, somehow I managed to find these little places. And, it was a lucky horseshoe. We just got lucky. But it was a buffet. It was a smorgasbord for bass. And, they were striking top water, anything you threw that looked like a shad or a shiner, they were going to just crush it and fight over it.
Now, yesterday was not a good day in the harbor. How are the bass? It seems like they're doing pretty good. Are you've been out fishing a couple of times since Irma came through.
Mm-hmm.
Is it more consistent on the freshwater side?
Yeah, because, it's not... You don't have any changes in the actual pH or the salinity of the water. You're not getting inundated with fresh water in the salt water areas. It's still fresh water. And if anything, a lot of the areas have cleaner water in them because the areas flooded and tended to wash any of the scum that was on the top or anything in the fresh water away. I caught some out of Alligator Creek yesterday afternoon. I took a walk up to where I would have had to have used a boat to get to, and just walked up to the edge of the creek on my property and caught 4 bass there on top water. Bass locally are going to respond, as well as other fish too. I mean, panfish, the panfish really love it, and it comes down to flowing water current in areas where there's not usually a flowing water or current. Those things push bait in the direction and makes it easy. The fish just hang in places where the current breaks and waits for it to bring it to them. So, you find those kind of areas, you can really do well.
Well, I've been looking, and now Prairie Creek dropped a lot. Well, not a lot, but it's dropped more than most. Shell Creek's down a couple of feet. Prairie Creek's down a couple of feet over the last week. There seemed to be going down. Now, we had looked at the Peace River. It was down to 14 feet.
Down
to 14. It was around 20-something. And they say it crested at 19, but I actually believe it was in the 20s because the gauge wasn't working for a while.
Yeah. Now, if you were going to do something like the Peace River, you could still fish areas there. Going out 17, that little cut through that goes to King's Highway.
Right. 760.
Yeah, 760 on the sides of that, those little oxbows and little areas in there. The water's a little bit higher in there, but it's not flowing through their gangbusters, and those bass will really be feeding and concentrating in those kind of areas. Bluegills, too.
I would say rattle traps would be what I'd want up there. You know, toss them up by the bank and let them work with the fall going down along the edges, because it's going to be murky and everything. So that I would try rattle trap up there. What about you?
If you wanted a multi-species especially, I would recommend a rattle trap, and I would try to go with tilapia style colors or the rattle trap that has the orange on it, especially.
I like that
crawdad
colors up there.
Yep. Because you know, those fish, the snook especially up there, really like those tilapias. And you know, you could catch a 20-pound snook there bass fishing.
Oh yeah, you're going to catch a bass in one cast, a snook on the next. It's going to be one or the other all the way up through there. That area is great for that.
Another good area for bass on the river is right there at Navigator. That area has been consistently good over the years since even when I was a kid fishing down there.
Yeah. Not as much in the last few years. Now, when you were a kid, I'd go along 100% with that, mm-hmm. because Lettuce Lake was freshwater year-round because of the artesian wells and all the springs mm-hmm. bubbling up. Those springs all quit when they did that big development with that campground out there.
Mm-hmm.
And between the Riverside RV and the one over off Lettuce Lake, they put a lot of wells down, and the water doesn't bubble up. So right now I'd go along with, yeah, there's probably going to be some pretty good bass fishing there. Mm-hmm. But in the last few years, it's just really fell off a lot.
That's a shame, because I took the guys from the Tampa Tribune. I took Frank Sargent and Dave Brown in there fishing. We put in right there in the Navigator and just absolutely destroyed the bass.
How long ago was that?
It's been about 15 years ago.
Yeah, because back then it was phenomenal. You could go back up in Lettuce Lake, and you had great bass fishing all year. And each year since then, it's declined. And now that's all brackished. And in the wintertime, mm-hmm. that's all saltwater.
Yeah, all saltwater.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You literally got to go up, you know, where Horse Creek, and the big river comes around to the right. You got that little narrow cut that goes through. That's actually where the freshwater starts now.
Wow, all the way up to Horse Creek.
Yeah, all the way up to Horse Creek.
Yeah, so, Horse Creek is pretty impressive fishing.
Oh, yeah.
Right now, that narrows up there. That's where I go. That's in the wintertime, that's where I start to find bass. Now, in the summertime, they can be anywhere. They can be down to the 41 Bridge.
They could almost be a Boca Grande.
Yeah, we were joking the other day that I'll bet you that the power poles probably have gar out there swimming around a little bit lost.
Well, you know, we have caught gar just about every year. We have a lot of rain off our dock in the bayou at Boca Grande.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. In Gaspar Island right now, I'm sure there's gar all the way out to there.
Oh, yeah.
For you wondering, gar is a freshwater fish. It kind of looks like a pike. Similar to northern pike, but a lot of teeth, very tiny, sharp teeth in it. Again, similar to northern pike. But they like to stay right near the surface, and salt's heavier than water, so salt goes to the bottom, fresh water stays on the top.
Yep.
So with a
plus
fish,
they're a very weak swimmer.
Yeah, and the fish that likes to hang out in that top 2 feet of water, foot to 2 foot of water, you'd be going along and seeing swirls on top of the water. Those are most often gar. Now, that's the reason why they go out further and further and further, because if you put salt in a cup of water, you'll see the salt falls to the bottom. It's that simple. Salt's heavier than water, so fresh water floats on top, gar hang out at the top, so they go places that a largemouth bass never would,
right,
because of that tendency.
Mm-hmm. That's why they put the salt in the stickos and those kind of things, to make them sink on their own without weight.
Yeah, that's one of the things that people forget, they figure it's for flavor, they figure all this, but no, salt actually is weight. So anyway, so the Garcia Reservoir is doing pretty good. Have we heard about anything around Peace River? You said you were down in Alligator Creek fishing?
Yeah, yeah. My property actually has Alligator Creek running through it, sometimes more than others, but it was...
It was flowing next to your front door a couple days ago.
It was at the front door. But, there's plenty of water in there. Obviously, the water's high, and there's a lot of fish in there. The water's very clean in there. It's dark tannic, but it's very clear dark tannic. It's not muddy in the least bit. Webb Lake, another great spot to go. I mean, all from the dam back in there, it's high water, but, you know, the high water is receding, so it's starting to push the bait fish out of those areas. So now's the real time to look in those kind of areas.
I'd like to go to Webb and do, you and I fish there with topwaters with the Zip and Ziggies. That would be a great thing to do right about now, get out right on the edge of those weeds.
Absolutely.
And I think you'd have a ball out there. Your average bass is going to be about a pound to 2 pounds. Mm-hmm. But I think you'd get a lot of them there at Webb right now.
Yep. And don't ever... You know, a lot of people get lulled into that 1-2 pound thing in there, and then all of a sudden Mr. Big's on there. I had a couple guys from Indiana out, and one guy was throwing a worm, and he caught maybe 4 bass in a row that were a pound, pound and a half, and then his next bass was 9 pounds, and he was, oh my gosh.
Well, yeah, because if there's small ones, somewhere or another, there's probably a bigger one.
Somebody made those, didn't they?
Yes. Somebody had to make the eggs for those little bass to be around. Now, Robert, any questions?
Have you heard of any die-off in any of the lakes where the main part of the storm went over?
I have not. You know, I was a little concerned about Lake O. Mm-hmm. And the reason I was concerned about it was the direction of the wind was blowing all of that really crappy water that's over near Port Myakka and on the eastern shoreline of the lake where it's pretty nasty and there's not a lot of vegetation. It was blowing that mud and silt into the Clewiston and up to Moorhaven area, which is nice and grassy and where you would traditionally do most of your fishing in the lake. But, you know, I haven't heard any reports other than that the bass are biting like gangbusters over there.
All right. Any idea what they're biting on there in Okeechobee?
Most of the guys that I get reports from are taking customers with shiners. So I would say probably a go-to bait there would be a rattle trap out on the deep grass edge or top water. Or you can throw like the Gambler Flappy Daddy or the Why Not. You could Texas rig that and peg the sinker and flip that in the heavy cover. And that's money in Lake Okeechobee. You can catch a live well full of 5 pound bass on that rig.
All right. So I guess we'll go over some of the major lakes. Now the Kissimmee chain to me would be really hard to fish. It's got to be running at flood stage.
Yeah, the Kissimmee chain is, but you know, keep in mind that you have lock systems in Kissimmee chain.
If they use them.
Yeah. They do. Sorry. They actually are, but...
I forgot. I got the Kissimmee River on here, but I haven't looked at it enough to... there's no graphs on it.
Yeah, all the locks right now will have flowing water. So if you... you know, when somebody locks in and out, a lot of these guys in the BASS thing, when they're doing these big tournaments, they'll sit at the locks all day and fish crankbaits and swim baits and things like that at the locks, concentrating on those fish that get flowing water, and that current's created artificially, you know, during that time by opening and closing the locks. Well, when they're letting water through, that's happening all the time, so those fish are staged there and feeding like crazy. That would be a really good pattern for the Kissimmee chain, you know, all the way up to Lake Toho.
So, all right. Istapoga, any word? Anybody?
Still high water in Istapoga. I talked to a guy that his dad lives on Istapoga, and he fishes with his dad all the time. And he said that this high water, they're catching them on spinnerbaits and frogs. And
the frogs have really turned on lately in general with a lot of the guys.
Yeah, the just a pure white frog. Has been doing quite well in Istapoga, and they're also catching them on June bug. gambler and culprit.
All right. And it's the same with manatee from what I've heard. You know, a lot of water in there and just not much happening. One of our customers came in this morning to pick up some shiners to go fish 9 Mile. And he usually likes to go up to Manatee, and he said it's just so much water. He said it's not even worth it for him to go up there right now, according to his buddy that he fishes with up there.
So, now around here, most of the canals and the creeks and everything else are brimful. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to be fishing the banks, fishing along the shorelines and stuff. Here's a prognosticator thing for you. What's crappie season going to be like? Because we're going to start crappie here in about a month. And we should get our first cool spells, because this is September. So usually sometime in October, November, the water starts chilling off, the crappies start bunching up. How do you think all this rain and all this water and everything is going to do? Is this going to be a mediocre year, bad year, good year?
I can see it being a really good year, mainly because it, you know, when you have high water, it covers traditional vegetation edges, and therefore minnows don't really have a whole lot of place to hide. And the higher the water, you know, that emergent grass that is normally sticking out is sometimes 2, 3 or more feet under the actual surface of the water. As that's starting to recede, it'll brush debris in, it'll bring in nutrients and feed that minnows will really just blow up on. So you're going to have a bumper crop of minnows after this sort of thing, even if they are getting demolished, you know, during the high water. You know, you're going to have the minnows are going to be there, and in turn the shad are going to have so much more to feed on now that all this is washed into these canals. And I'm talking local Port Charlotte, Punta Gorda, those kind of areas, Lake Betty type of an area or something like that.
But I think
that.
This is going to hold true for almost everywhere in the state, because yeah. The whole state's doing high water.
Mm-hmm.
We've got reports of snow up in the northwest, you know, some of the mountains out west, the ski resorts are already getting snow. So it's only a matter of time before some of this works its way down to us. And I just wasn't sure how this... So you're expecting a better than average crappie season because of the better than average forage for the minnows and
shad.
You know, shads. So that'll be interesting to find out. We'll see how Morris turns out to be as a prognosticator, I guess.
Okay. I'm going to go the opposite direction.
All right. What's your tone, Robert?
And this is kind of a question also going opposite of where you were going with it.
Mm-hmm.
All that vegetation, all that debris gets flowed in, and you were talking earlier about some of the sulfur gases at some of those places.
Mm-hmm.
With all this debris that has been dropped into the water and pushed a lot of lily pads on top of each other and hyacinth and all that stuff, as it decomposes, I know that sometimes if you get real strong winds, it turns the bottom over a little bit and will release all that, and it sucks the oxygen out of the water and can smother the fish.
Yes.
I could see that happening on certain lakes if we have a strong enough cold front.
If we went from 80 degrees to a 50 degree day overnight, I could see some of the lakes rolling over. But if it's the gradual cooling that we usually get down here, I just don't see that coming about. The only time I've seen the lakes roll over is when it's very hot one day, and then a cold front comes through and literally just...
Freezing temperature.
Yeah, just it would have to be a 40, 50 degree drop of cold, icy wind.
Okay.
In order to get a lake to roll over in that. In that aspect, the only times I remember lakes rolling over is sometimes late in the year or the beginning of the year, where we're having very warm temperatures, and then we get a cold front that comes through and it drops it from 80 degrees to, you know, 30, 40 degrees, you know, down around that 40 degree range.
Yeah.
And then the cold water on top becomes heavier and wants to sink the bottom. The bottom of the lake is still warm, and that rises up, the cold water drops down, and it's when those waters are passing each other, it's just done.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I think that's what it'd take to get a lake roll. Now,
most of our little
areas... Is that average right or average wrong?
No, that's right on. And most of our little canals, you know, since we're talking about, I mean, basically our area right here, you know, in this county and Sarasota County to some degree, but most of those areas aren't inundated with water hyacinths and things like that. They have a lot of cattails in them, and I don't think we had the wind direction or the speed to literally tear cattails out and cause them to really, you know, move in this area. On the East Coast they did, because they had some pretty severe wind coming in across areas that there's no homes, and it's basically flat swampy land, so the wind had nothing to really slow it down, so it could really you know, do yeah. some damage on that side. This side, you know, I would be real surprised to see fish kills. You know, that being said, the lake that was in my front yard, there's a whole lot of dead bluegills and gar and things and minnows that were trapped out there and didn't make it back into the lake or the creek. That,
now, that's one fish kill that I could probably get along with. We had so much major flooding on the Peace River, the Shell Creek, Bird Creek. Every river creek around here went through major flooding, and those fish going up out in the new areas, like trapped in Morris's yard. Carl saw schools of fish crossing the road. They're going to get trapped in ditches and other places, and we will lose some fish because they're going to go into places where, as the water went down, they're stuck in that little deeper area, and then the water's going to evaporate out. And so, right. But I think that would be a minimal loss.
And most of those would probably be rough fish. Tilapias, gars, things like that, placostomuses, and
right. We could lose a bunch of those.
Yeah,
we got those to spare. Not as many as we had a few years ago.
The remember? Freeze took those out.
Yeah, because a few years ago, boy, we went through Hancock, Iron Lake, whatever it is up there, just put landing nets out in the water, and we were catching them idling along.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, there was just so many of those in the lake that you literally just put the net in there, idled the boat forward, and we're catching them.
And it's easier than dipping shrimp.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Out of the well.
So, right?
All right, but let's look at some of the other lakes in the area. Now, let's drop down to the Everglades, because now the Everglades took a big hit. Everglades, Chokoloskee, Everglades City. How did Everglades Park over there do? Any word from down there?
You know, they're assessing damage still down there. I mean, you know, that's probably priority 10 on the list right now.
I just didn't know if anybody had heard anything.
I have not.
Yeah, they're really torn up down there, and I haven't made a trip down to check on my Oscar areas and my largemouth areas down in the Everglades yet either.
I don't believe I would for a while.
No, it's going to be sometime around February or March before I go down there, after the when it's full drought season.
Yeah, I would not go stay out of Naples. Anywhere from Fort Myers south right now is not a good idea. People are recovering, and
just leave it alone.
And the worst thing about it, people don't understand, well, I want to drive down and see the damage. Stay the heck out.
Mm-hmm.
It's none of your business. If you're going down there with hammers, shovels, rakes, chainsaws,
water,
and you're helping,
food.
Well, they've got that. But
not all
if
of them.
You're going down there
Someone
to help.
Someone was struggling still with that.
If you're going down to help, that's one thing. But if you're going down to sightsee, shame on you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Shame on you.
Yeah, and also, you know, there may be some guys out there listening to this program, or girls, but you know, I just want to give a big shout out, because I have seen nothing. I've been all the way across the state several times since the storm, and I've seen nothing but out-of-state utility trucks, ambulances, work trucks, work vans, all the way Pennsylvania, Louisiana, Ohio.
The guys who keep the cell phone towers going. There's guys going around right now. I mean, Tom Fisher, Brian Ball, all these guys. They're running around with installing generators on cell phone towers and keeping them going with diesel,
mm-hmm.
so that everybody can communicate, the police and everybody. I mean, these guys are unsung heroes that I didn't even know existed until I met one.
Right.
And along with the power companies, and God bless you garbage men. My heart goes out to you. We feel for you. We love you, garbage men. I mean, to put up, because everybody emptied out their freezers and refrigerators. So much food was lost. thousands of tons of food had to be thrown out across Florida, South Carolina, Georgia, and these poor garbage men in this heat are hauling that stuff out, and it is disgusting. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's horrific. And yeah. God bless you guys for staying on the job. Thank you, garbage men, wherever you are. And I don't care what anybody says. We love you. Thank you. The unsung hero. Because people complain about, you know, all the garbage truck stinks. Think about working on that thing. I don't care how much money you're making. That is all that's just dynamic.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. No, shout out everybody who has given a hand and, sacrificing. I mean, people that have come down here from Pennsylvania and Michigan
all the out-of-the-state tree companies that are cutting down the trees to help the power companies be able to run the lines.
You got Pike Electric and Ashland and all these people. People say, oh, well, they're making big bucks.
They're getting paid, but they should be getting paid.
You jump out there.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing about it is you're making money, but you're missing your kid's wedding, you're missing a birthday, you're missing your family, you're sleeping in a truck or in a crappy hotel. Yeah, you're making money, but...
All those crews, the big wagon trains that are going south toward the Keys and Naples and Marco Island, and I mean, it's just wagon train after wagon train of utility trucks and everything going down to rebuild the power grid, they're not sleeping in anything other than their truck. You know, they are... There's nothing down there for them to sleep in. Tent, maybe.
I've gone on the road working, and sometimes, yeah, you're making big bucks, but most of the time you just wish you were home.
Yeah. Yeah, you're paying for it in a whole lot of ways.
Yeah, so big shout out to those guys.
Yeah, good call. All right. So, anyway, I just know the garbage guys who came by my place.
Oh,
nice as they could be. And, man... I was helping them throw bags in because we've had a massive cleanup going on and getting all that stuff in there. And I walked back to the truck and went, whoa. So I got to tell you.
A lot of rotten food.
Yeah, they're human too. Anyway, back into the fishing, we've got crappie season coming up in the next month or two. Going to be looking forward to that. Now, right now... we're just kind of in general fishing. There's nothing special going on. No spawns that I know of any species at this time of year yet.
Yeah, no spawn right now. The only thing that is happening right now is that we have had that break in temperatures in the daytime.
And our first little cold front come through the other day.
Yeah, it slipped through. We got a little dry weather, and it was noticeable. But that storm in combination with that little cool front has dropped our water temperatures a little bit. And since we're talking about fresh water,
I would think about 10 to 13 degrees.
It's quite a bit. It was up around 90 degrees in some of the lakes, and now you're at 82, 81 degrees in the lakes, which is going to trigger a fall feed because all these species around here, they're feeding, bass especially, they like to spawn starting about December, January, February, March. So they're going to start a fall feed up. So now is a really good time to get out there and go freshwater fishing.
Well, if we can get one more little cool spell to come down here, that's going to make a big difference. I think
about 2 weeks.
If we get one in about 2 weeks.
October 3rd, I'm going to call it.
All right. Well, that's...
The first bad one's always with the Fort Lauderdale Boat Show. It coincides perfectly with it. So.
Always, yeah, absolutely. That's in November, right?
No, it's going to be October.
Is it October this year?
Okay. Well, anyway,
Halloween time.
So we're calling white frogs. As far as worms go, we're looking at purples.
Purples, dark colors, but don't ignore the black blue tail. Black blue tail is great.
Okay.
Especially in dark water. It's a good color anytime. Something not to ignore, especially with this really dark water, pink. Solid pink.
Oh, yeah.
I sold a guy one yesterday, and he thought I had three heads.
Yeah. Solid pink.
Clear brown stained water is when pink is better than anything. When we get that end of the rains and it's stopped and the mud is gone, but the water's that stained color, mm-hmm. but it's clear, in the fall and in the spring there's about 2 weeks in the fall, 2 weeks in the spring where nothing catches many fish as pink.
And it doesn't matter. You can use a pink X-Wrap. Is an awesome color.
Absolutely.
But then you can go and just get, you know, go to the wall and get a pink Sluggo, Jerkbait, any of those in pink. And oh, I wanted to mention a lure that we've been catching some really nice large bass, bigger bass. And if guys are interested in it, it's not a secret lure. It's just something that's normally thought of as a saltwater lure, but the 10-inch hoagies that you have, you rig those up with a 5/6-aught wide gap worm hook, no weight, and we're catching some, you know, 6 to 9 pound bass on those.
Well, hey, why not? It's a copy of a Sluggo, which I got all the jerk baits are.
Yeah.
You know.
But, you know, it's.
But it's big.
Again, big. Uh-oh. A lot of times a big bass wants a big bait to eat.
And big bait, big fish. Wah, 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 wah.
Yep.
See, I've used that 12 inch culprit, but it's never crossed my mind to use that hoagie until last week when Chandler was asking what other different baits to use, and I told him I'd use that hoagie for something different.
Yeah. Yep, the black color and the white pearl that has a little bit of purple in it are really good, but the solid pink that we were just talking about is another really good one. It's hard to get a bad color there.
Yeah. All right. Anything else that we should be going over, guys?
Not that I can think of.
All right. So, I guess when all's said and done, I guess the best thing to do is just get out there and do it. But remember, when you're standing on the bank, cast left and right as much as you cast straight out.
Absolutely.
It's
way overlooked.
Yeah, the hardest thing about it is a guy gets in the boat, he goes along and casts at the shoreline. A guy standing on the shore goes out and casts where the boat's sitting. So cast left, right, and do the whole clock in front of you. Figure at 9 o'clock, 3 o'clock. Don't just cast, you know, 11, 12, and 1. Cast all the way from 9 o'clock all the way around to 3 o'clock. Find out if the fish are out there, against the edges. Work the area. Actually, you're going to find a lot more fish because they could be hanging out, you know, within a foot of the mangrove or of the grass, or they could be up in the grass. And that's to your left or right, unless you can reach all the way across the water. So, anyway, Fish and Frank here. Robert and Chair across me, and Captain Morse Campbell, our freshwater report guy, in the guest spot. So, everybody want to say goodbye?
Goodbye.
Well, that was good in harmony. You had a nice lower third on that one, Robert. All right. Well, guys, thanks for listening. We're going to try and get back on with more of the reports. I guess that's it. See you in the, or look, well, you can hear us on the next Radio Fishing, I guess is the thing to say. Bye bye, boys.
Yeah, they wouldn't want to see us.
They wouldn't. I don't do video. It's not a pretty sight.